Next, The Lawyer You Know with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos.
Welcome back to another episode of The Lawyer You Know, and today we're going to do a special feature on the history of our firm as explained by our founding member, my dad, George Tragos. He's going to go through a lot of his biography, a lot of his history, and we'll weave in how the firm started and how we got here. So if you like this type of content and want to hear more of it, please subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to our YouTube channel, like this video, leave a review so that you can be alerted anytime we come up with a new podcast or a new video so you won't miss it. So Dad, just to start out, why don't you give us just an explanation, a little bit about your life, where you were born, when you got here, how long you've been in Pinellas County, and just kind of where you're at right now in life.
I was born in Chicago, Illinois at Garfield Park Hospital. When I was 6 years old, my parents moved from Chicago to Clearwater, Florida. And we've been in Clearwater, Florida ever since. I went to Clearwater Catholic High School. I went to Florida State University.
Clearwater Central Catholic.
Yes.
Still here.
Still here.
Fourth graduating class.
Yes.
You went to Jesuit, right?
No.
Where'd you go?
Clearwater Central.
No, but where'd you go before that? Oh, no, you went to
Admiral Farragut.
Right,
Farragut.
Okay, so you went to Admiral Farragut
right. And
Clearwater Central Catholic, two schools still in the area, still pretty big schools in the area.
Right.
Then Florida State for undergraduate.
Right.
Florida State for law school.
Correct.
Okay.
Moved back to Clearwater, started working in Clearwater, and I met my wife at a HEPA convention. We got married, and I've had three children. All of my children were born in Morton Plant Hospital. I have seven grandchildren, and almost they all at one time lived in Clearwater, but I have now one daughter and son-in-law and four grandchildren that have moved to Colorado Springs. And so, and I've been in the same house in Clearwater for 34 years.
Okay, so what has it been like to have, tell a little bit about your ethnic background and what that's meant. You mentioned a HEPA. We're in Clearwater, which is close to Tarpon Springs, big Greek community. What's that been like?
Well, that's been great to take advantage of Tarpon Springs and the great Greek restaurants. We've gone there quite a bit, especially to eat. Initially, there was no Greek church in Clearwater when we first moved here. So we went to church actually in Tarpon Springs, and I was an altar boy in Tarpon Springs. In fact, the former mayor of Clearwater, George Criticus, and I were altar boys together in Tarpon. And we would celebrate holidays, Easter, all of that in Tarpon Springs. There's some interesting stories that because it was such a long drive and Easter is a lot of services in the Greek Orthodox Church, I actually would spend the night in Tarpon with some friends so that my parents wouldn't have to drive back and forth, because at the time, and for many, many years, we owned a lot of restaurants in Clearwater. And I worked in those restaurants. I've been a dishwasher, a busboy, a bartender, a waiter. I've done everything in the restaurant business you can imagine, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
And that's when you came down here for, because your dad opened a restaurant in Clearwater, right?
Right.
So that's a Greek tie as well. And then, so we didn't have a church in Clearwater, but then we ended up having one now, Holy Trinity.
Right. My dad was one of the founding board members. In fact, when the church was built, they didn't have any credit. So individual members of the church had a sign on the mortgage. And my dad was right. My dad signed a personal liability on the mortgage in order for the Greek church to be built in Clearwater.
So big time Greek ties to the community, which will come into play later as we talk about the progression of the firm and how we got to where we are now and why our emails all say GreekLaw.com, because we're tied into this Greek community. So you went to law school at Florida State. You went to undergrad at Florida State. Was that always the plan to become a lawyer?
I really didn't want to become a lawyer from a young age.
I did.
I had an uncle that was a lawyer, uncle-in-law that was a lawyer, married to my aunt. And he was a pretty sharp guy, and I was really impressed by him and impressed by how he handled himself. So being a lawyer was something that I really had in my mind and in my heart for a long time, for sure all through high school and for sure all through college. And I never wavered from that. That's always what I wanted to be.
What was the first job you had that got you interested in kind of a legal career?
Job. Well, I had no really legal jobs until after I graduated from law school.
Well, what about the legislative?
That was in law school.
Okay.
Oh, in-law school.
That's what I'm saying. So okay. That was probably the first. That's what I'm thinking of, but I don't know if there was one before that.
No. Before
that.
So
talk about that experience working with the legislature.
Before that, it was all restaurants.
Okay. And you knew you didn't want to do that.
And I knew I didn't want to do that because I saw, you know, my dad was working 18 hours a day. Greeks don't necessarily trust managers. So he was there every day, all day, made sure he handled all the money. My mother worked there. It was pretty much a family business because I'd work there. We'd work every holidays, New Year's Eve, all that stuff. So I was always at the restaurant. But I knew I really didn't want to do that. And it was acceptable for a Greek boy, if he didn't want to go in the restaurant business, to become a lawyer or a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I had no problem with that. So I went to law school at Florida State. I went there my freshman year. After my freshman year, a job opened up, and Tallahassee is a great place to go to law school because there's so many jobs for law students. And so I became a legislative aide to a guy named Bob Hector, who was a legislator from Miami. So I worked for him for a year in the legislature, and then I got a job as a financial analyst for the Finance and Tax Committee of the Florida House of Representatives. So that's what I did my senior year.
And did that get you interested in law even more?
It did. It did, and it got me interested in tax law, actually. I really enjoyed the intricacies of tax law and the little minutiae that you look at in tax law.
All right, so you start law school at Florida State. What year did you start law school?
I started law school in 1971, and I graduated in 1974. Okay. I went directly from college to law school.
Do you remember anything about the size of your classes, how many people were there, anything like that?
There were about 150 when we started. Quite a few dropped out. In fact, unfortunately, law school is fairly stressful, especially back then. We had 2 suicides in my class. But when we graduated, we were probably around 130, something like that.
In your class?
My class.
Okay. And what is your favorite or best or most memorable law school moment?
My best law school moment was probably advanced criminal law. And it's because I did so well in it. I got such a high grade. You know, law school back then was a real struggle. The professors, although they were open and they talked to you and they were friendly, there wasn't as much help or remedial help in law school as there is now. They didn't care if you graduated or not. You flunked out, you flunked out. It was a matter of attrition. Now they care more and they want to keep the law students. So that high grade in criminal law was really something I really, really remember.
Okay, was that with Yetter?
Yes.
Okay, so there's some professors that even when I went to law school in 2010 that were still there from when you went to law school. Yetter was one, and then Earhart, for any lawyers listening, Professor Earhart literally wrote the book on evidence in Florida that we cite and use in our trials, and he was one of your professors, right? He was probably your favorite
Yetter,
professor.
Yetter and Earhart were just young pups right out of law school.
They were not young pups when I was there.
They were brilliant, but they were right out of law school. And they came to Florida State to teach, and I think I might have been one of the first classes Yetter ever taught was our criminal law class.
And it's really cool experience to have such legal giants as your professor, which is also why Florida State's awesome.
Right.
And we both back that big time still to this day. Okay, so after you graduate law school in 74, you said?
Yes.
Okay, what was your first job after law school?
I interviewed for a bunch of jobs and got offers. Back then, surprisingly enough, the state attorney's office was one of the higher paying jobs for lawyers. And so I got an offer from the state attorney's office in Pinellas County, which meant I could come home. And so I took that job, so I became an assistant state attorney or state prosecutor in Pinellas County, which is Pinellas and Pasco County, because here locally we have a 2-county circuit.
And how long did you work there?
I worked there about 4 years. I was the chief of the felony division, chief of the misdemeanor division, and then at the very end, the federal government funded a career criminal division where you only prosecuted the worst of the worst, and 4 lawyers were picked out of the office for that, and I was selected one of the 4, so I ended my career as one of the 4 lawyers in the career criminal division.
Who were the other 3, do you remember?
Lee Fugate, Bob Merkel, and Charles Cope.
Okay, which will be, so Cope became a judge, right?
Cope became a judge.
And we'll get to Merkel later, but you'll remember that name. Bob Merkel was in that division with you. Okay. And then Bernie McCabe was there at the same time as you, right?
Bernie was an assistant state attorney with me. We were, you know, the same rank.
And he was, so he ended up becoming the state attorney for,
right after.
How long was he?
My guy was Jimmy Russell. He was the state attorney when I was there.
Right.
When Jimmy Russell left and retired. Bernie McCabe was his chosen successor, and he's won election every time, and then just recently passed
just
away.
So he was state attorney for your entire career, basically.
I've had two state attorneys my entire career.
Right.
Jimmy Russell and Bernie McCabe.
So why don't you give us, I'm sure there's a lot of stories, why don't you give us the one that sticks out the most, favorite story, biggest case, while you were at the Pinellas County State Attorney's Office?
I had a lot of funny experiences at the Pinellas County State Attorney's Office. That was just tons of fun prosecuting those cases. It was a time when you could make jokes, and a time when you could have some fun. Some of them today would be probably inappropriate, but
definitely.
Yeah, you would do, like, for instance, there'd be death penalty cases where we would be prosecuting someone on a death penalty case. And back then they were using the electric chair, not the injections. So while we were passing behind defendants on those cases, we would do things like go bzz, bzz. The defendant would just go crazy. And those are the things we got away with back then. We got away with...
Seems inappropriate.
It is inappropriate. We got away with jokes where we would put inappropriate pictures in files. So when a lawyer was standing in front of a judge, and the judge would be in on the joke, and you said, "Judge, make sure he opens the file." So the lawyer would open the file and this picture would fall out. The whole place would go crazy and laugh. The defendant wouldn't know what was going. The judge would call a recess so everybody could go outside and calm down. But the judges would be in on it. And then there was another story, which is a kind of a famous story, was when I was prosecuting an individual and for a burglary where he had reached in and stolen some checks in a desk and forged the names on the checks and cashed the checks. So he was claiming that those checks were paychecks that he had received. And he was up on the stand testifying, saying they were paychecks, that he didn't steal the checks. And I asked him, "Well, what'd the person look like that you stole, that, you know, that gave you these paychecks?" "Well, you know, just average guy." And I said, "Well, was he white or was he black?" And he said, "Well, he wasn't white and he wasn't black." And I said, "Well, if he wasn't white and he wasn't black, then what was he?" He goes, "Well, he was kind of Greekish." And again, the whole place cracked up. A recess, judges run out of the courtroom. Again, it was a time when, you know, you could have some fun. In today's world, you don't have that kind of fun. Plus, the volume is so much greater in the courtrooms that the judges just
were there total back then?
We probably had about 40.
And how many are there now?
Probably about 100.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So after you finished at the state attorney's office 4 years, then what was your next job, first private job?
Well, when I left the state attorney's office, I became a partner in a firm. It was Case, Kempton, and Tragos. Eventually, it became Case, Kempton, Tragos, and Burke. And I did all the litigation for the other partners. And our office was on Clearwater Beach. It was a beautiful office right on the beach. And so I stayed there for about 3-4 years.
And what was a favorite story or something that stuck out about that job?
Well, one of the stories I like to tell is the table that I used as my table in my office, at that office, we still have here in the office
and
today.
And it's still in
it's
your office.
It's that round one. It's the round one.
Okay.
And we still use that table today in the office.
You may have seen it on other podcasts or videos, the one that we usually sit around with the mics on it.
And we had one partner in the firm that was particularly tight with the money. And so we would do things to this poor guy, and he would put the checkbook in his desk so that he would know if anybody took a check out. And we would like buy things that would drive him crazy. We'd buy expensive pens, and he'd come in and notice a check missing and investigate and question all the secretaries to find out who bought the expensive pen. Or we would do firm trips. We did firm retreats. We did one down at Key West, and we would tell the waitress that we were going to order double lobster. But we only wanted a single one, but just, you know, we're just going to tell her double. So we're sitting there, and she's taking the orders, and I'm saying, "Well, I'll take two lobsters." And this guy would go, "What? Two lobsters?" And he'd look at the price. He'd get all upset. He got red in the face. And we'd say, no. We're just joking. He never could even order a dinner. He was so ruined by the fact that we were going to order double lobster, he never ordered another meal.
All right, so after that firm, or what happened? So you were working there for how many years, and then what happened?
About three
what was
or
the
four
next
years,
career step?
I left the state attorney's office in 1978, And in 1983, Bob Merkel, who we'd mentioned earlier as one of the attorneys in the Department of Justice-funded career criminal program, the reason he was there, by the way, was because he worked for the Department of Justice. They sent him down to head the program. So he goes back up to the Department of Justice in the meantime, and he becomes or gets appointed the U.S. attorney for the Middle District of Florida.
Which is the federal prosecutor.
Right, which is the chief federal prosecutor. And he's appointed by the president and confirmed by Congress, or the Senate. So he becomes the U.S. attorney. I'm on an airplane, and I'm flying to Denver or Salt Lake City, somewhere out west, and Bob's on the plane with me. So we sit down, we have a drink, we play poker all the way from here to Denver. And I knew he had just been appointed. At the very end of the flight, Bob goes, look, why don't you come and work for me? And I said, Bob, I'm really very happy. I'm making a really good living and enjoying being in private practice. He said, no, no. He says, in the long run, come work for me. I guarantee you, your career will get a boost from being an assistant U.S. attorney for 3 years. And so I said, and he offered me the chief of the criminal division. So I'm head of all the criminal prosecutions from Jacksonville to Fort Myers. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I left my firm in 83, and I went and joined the United States Attorney's Office as chief of the criminal division.
Do you think he was right?
Absolutely right.
So in the U.S. Attorney's Office, there's the head, the U.S. Attorney Merkel, and then there are two chiefs, right? One of the civil division, one of the criminal
Correct.
Division. So the civil division makes all the civil decisions, and the criminal division chief, which was you, makes all the decisions on who gets what case criminal-wise, which ones are going to go to trial, what deals have to be approved, stuff like that.
Everything.
Okay, so that's what you did. How long did you do that for?
I did that for a little over 2 years, which was my commitment.
Okay, so you're at the U.S. Attorney's Office for a little over 2 years. What is, I'm sure there are, again, lots of stories, lots of cases, but what is a big moment, story, case that you really remember from your time there?
Well, one of them was that I prosecuted a lawyer from St. Petersburg who was a very prominent lawyer. And we discovered that he was conspiring with drug dealers. So I went up and supervised an investigation in Georgia because one of the drug dealers was in Georgia and he agreed to cooperate. This lawyer went up to meet him in Georgia. We put a microphone on the defendant, the drug dealer. Drug dealer met with the lawyer, and we basically got the whole plan, a whole conspiracy laid out on tape. And you know, I was there and directed that investigation. I always enjoyed that. I directed a lot of investigations. Actually, back then, you could actually, as a prosecutor, be involved in the investigation. They don't do that as much anymore, but I always enjoyed doing that. This lawyer was Greek. And when he was arrested, we also arrested some co-defendants that were Greek. During the bond hearings in court, they would cuss at me in Greek during the hearings. I would be the only one that understood what they had to say. And so it made for an interesting prosecution because we got to communicate outside of the normal communications.
Okay, so you are at the U.S. Attorney's Office for a little over 2 years, and then why did you leave? What made you leave the U.S. Attorney's Office?
Well, because I thought my time was, I'd gotten as much out of it as I could. I benefited from it. I enjoyed it tremendously. But financially, there was a lot more money to be made out in private practice.
Right.
And it made it a lot more valuable. When you talk about whether or not, you asked me whether it was worth it or not, mm-hmm. my average fees just about tripled after the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Right, with that experience.
Because, you know, I did federal grand juries. Only a handful of people in the country do federal grand juries.
Right.
And only a handful of people in the country are both state prosecutors and federal prosecutors, because I knew both systems.
And know exactly what the prosecutors are thinking when they're making these charging decisions and what kind of deals
right.
they're looking to make and what they're trying to accomplish.
And I know how investigations go. So when I'm cross-examining
right.
a police officer or an FBI agent, I know exactly what that FBI agent did because they have a manual and they have to follow that
and
manual.
What they were instructed to do and
right.
what their communication would be like with the prosecutor. Right. So that gave you some knowledge not many people have. And whenever I explain your career, we say it's a career that nobody can have anymore because most people that get that high are career prosecutors
right.
now.
In fact, they hire them that way. They ask them, are you going to stay? Because they got tired of training the defense lawyers.
Right. Right. So, okay, so you end up leaving basically for financial reasons and because you feel like you've kind of capped out everything you could do and learn there. And you always wanted to go back into private practice.
Always,
that was the plan,
yes.
And Merkel knew that. So what did you do when you went back out into private practice?
Well, when I went out in private practice, initially, I shared space with another lawyer who was also a good lawyer. And so initially, we shared space. We had a good criminal firm going. At some point, though, I wanted just to go out by myself. And I did that, and I opened the law office of George E. Tragos.
Right.
And that was in about 1985, 86.
Okay. So 1985, law office of George E. Tragos starts, and that continues for quite some time, you by
yes.
yourself, right?
Yes.
Was that always your plan and goal, just have a solo firm where you could just control schedule, no boss, do whatever you want to do? Was that your goal?
It pretty much was. I wasn't somebody that wanted to manage a lot of people. I managed a bunch of people at the state attorney's office. I managed a bunch of people at the U.S. attorney's office. I just thought that I just liked to be just by myself, and I really enjoyed that.
And why? What did you like about the solo firm life, and what did you like about that? What drew you to that?
Well, one is you don't have to do things by committee. You don't have to sit around and everybody talk around, everybody make a decision. We all vote. Should we buy a table? Should we go here? Should we go there? You made all the decisions by yourself. And I like that. I like that atmosphere. I like the freedom of I could leave, take days off. I didn't have anybody to answer to except for my wife. So I enjoyed that.
So it was the law office of George E. Tragos, solo practitioner for what, 25 years?
Till 2001.
So 16 years, you were just by yourself, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So 16 years, you're by yourself. Then how does Pete come into the picture?
Well, in 2001,
Pete Sardis
walks into my office and to meet me. And he was sent there by his uncle who owned a restaurant in Tarpon Springs.
Again, this comes back to the Greek community, Greek ties.
Right.
Pete's very Greek, the most Greek of all of us probably.
Probably.
So he ends up coming in and his thing is he wants to work for the best Greek lawyer in town. And that's what everybody said about you.
Well, actually he said the best lawyer in town.
He tells me the story a little differently.
The best lawyer in town. And his uncle sent him to me.
Okay.
It just happened that I was Greek.
But you had other law clerks and other people come
for
a few other associates.
Nobody ever offered a job.
You never had an associate? Okay.
No, never had an associate.
Okay.
No.
So then how did Pete become an associate?
Well, he came in and he offered to work for free. He was still in law school. And he offered to work for free and said that he just wanted the experience. I felt bad having him work for free, so I paid him a minimum wage. And so he started working for me. We worked real well together. He was a good lawyer. And so I thought, maybe this is the time to bring someone on to help me because I had a pretty good caseload. I normally have complex cases that have a lot of work to them, sometimes a lot of paperwork, a lot of witnesses, just something where somebody that was really quality could really help me.
And he had MBA, JD background, finance background, former
right.
military.
And he also did work in the public defender's office.
Right, right. So he kind of had the experience you're looking for. So he ends up coming on in 2001.
Right.
And then when does he become a partner?
He becomes a partner in 2007.
Okay.
I believe he became a partner.
So then it's law offices of Tragos and Sardis. And
right.
at that point, you guys are still doing mostly criminal defense.
Almost
work.
All criminal defense. Yeah.
Right.
Very
okay.
few. The only thing we really weren't doing those criminal defense were things that were related to criminal defense.
Appeals.
Like forfeitures, appeals,
right.
civil RICO, those kind of things.
Okay. And then it's weird for me to ask these questions. I'm sure you don't know the dates, but then I come on. How
right.
I got the job is pretty easy since...
Well, actually, we had to really negotiate with you. You weren't easy to bring on, if you remember.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, you were in law school.
So what do you remember about me starting? 2013, I'll help you with that. I started in 2013. So what do you remember about it?
Well, I remember that when you were about to graduate, and you actually worked for me in the summers.
Right.
But when you were about to graduate, I figured that you were going to come down here. Well, you had other job offers, and you graduated at one of the top guys in your class, and so other firms were looking at you and giving you offers. I knew that there was no better opportunity for you than coming here, that you were going to have more influence if you came here. It wouldn't be years before you were a partner. It wouldn't be years before you made decent money. that this is the place for you to make, you can make decisions and have an impact. You unfortunately didn't know that. And so you were looking at these other firms because they were offering you these fairly lucrative packages to go work for them.
And instead of matching them like a good father would,
I couldn't, I mean,
it's just my first lesson in negotiating.
You negotiated pretty well.
Yeah, it ended up okay, but
instead of taking
less money to come here was the right decision.
But it's not about me.
So.
But I gave you potential because I also said we'd bonus you
based on
production.
And
so it worked out real well.
Sure.
Aren't you happy?
Yes, very, very happy.
Okay.
It's not about me, though. We're just talking about you and talking about the firm. So I come in 2013, become a partner in, I think, 2015.
Right.
And so then it becomes the law offices. Right. Another thing that wasn't necessarily a benefit to me at the time. But so 2015, we become the law offices of Trago, Starrs & Trago. So talk about how the firm changed when I got here and what we've kind of morphed into now.
Well, I think we should start with the fact that one of those job offers was the state attorney's office. And that's where I started, is the state attorney's office, to gain that experience. He didn't think that in today's world, those 3 years the state attorney's office would benefit him as much as in my time, in my era. And by the way, he was right. Those 3 years, instead of the state attorney's office and getting the criminal prosecution experience, he got civil personal injury experience in those 3 years and built up a civil practice and wanted to do that and asked me, we said, should we change the focus of the firm? By the way, that's not the first time the focus of the firm has changed. I don't know if I ever told you this, but at one time we did almost totally drug defense, illegal drugs, smuggling, boatloads from Colombia. When the government got into forfeiting all the cash and all the money so they couldn't pay lawyers, then we had to kind of change. We became a white collar firm where we were defending mostly economic crime.
Right.
Because the drug defense kind of dried up. So we changed, and we did it successfully. And now and today, Peter's emphasis is personal injury. The firm emphasis really now is personal injury. Not my emphasis. I'm still criminal. But I think that the firm is morphing into a personal injury firm, which has been very successful and I think was the right decision, because you do have to change with the times. You do have to understand what the future holds in the practice of law. And it is, and again, we've talked about this, the fees that you charge for criminal, fewer and fewer people can pay those fees. And I think we also recognize that.
Yeah, and Pete did a lot of criminal and has a lot of experience with criminal, still handles criminal cases, but does majority of personal
Vast
injury.
Majority, right.
Right, but he still does a handful of criminal cases. It's a smaller volume. But he got all that experience and has a lot of experience in criminal as well. And so we still do criminal, but the majority of what we do now is personal injury. All of what I do basically is personal injury outside of a couple cases. Okay, so talk about some of the most famous people, celebrities, high profile cases, things that you've had in your career over the last 40 years.
Well, Hulk Hogan is a civil action. We represented a personal injury case. We represented John Graziano, who was in the passenger seat.
Military vet,
all-American boy, in the passenger seat of this car that was built for racing,
right,
basically. And there was a severe accident. They lost control of the car. The driver was Hulk Hogan's son.
Right.
And we represented...
Traumatic brain injury.
And it's been years and years now. He's still very slowly recovering. But he still, unfortunately, still can't take care of himself. His mother
right.
is his caregiver.
Right.
We filed civil suit against Hulk Hogan, his son, and his wife, and we were successful.
Right. Sure.
It was settled.
And that was a big case, and a lot of people had nasty things to say. We're not Hulk Hogan's biggest fans now, or he's not
right.
our biggest fans. Maybe
right.
that's what I mean.
I think so.
Okay. Who else? Any other?
Well, we remember Noriega, General Noriega. When he was indicted, when he was president of Panama, his number one friend who had all the airplane part concessions in Panama was a guy named Enrique Pretel. I represented Enrique. In fact, right after the invasion, I flew down in the FBI director's plane, his private Learjet, flew down, landed at a military Air Force base in Panama in order to arrange for my client's surrender. So my client came back in order to cooperate against Noriega. And he received a great deal for that. I represented Florida Federal Savings and Loan, which was a large institution here in the St. Pete Clearwater area, when they were charged by the federal government with student loan fraud. So I represented them, and we worked out a great deal for them. They had a division that when you have student loans, you're supposed to try to collect them. They had a division within that group called the Creative Writing Division. That's literally what they called it, where they would falsify all the notifications to the students to try to collect their loans.
So all these years of doing these kinds of cases and others, what do you think it means, or what do you think is some of the benefits of having roots in a town where you grew up, where I grew up? The firm's been here for 40 plus years. Your entire career has been there. What have been some of the benefits of that longevity in a town like Pinellas County, Tampa Bay area?
I think the biggest is credibility. I can call somebody and tell them something and they believe it, whereas somebody else they might not believe, or somebody they don't know.
Right.
I can call the state attorney's office and tell them this is what happened and they'll believe it. I can tell them my client is willing to do this and they'll believe it. So I think credibility is the best thing, because you've been here, they know your reputation, they know the firm's reputation, and they know that it's just not worth lying or doing something for a client that's wrong in order to get the benefit in one case, and it's going to hurt you in everything you do.
Okay, and what kind of advice would you give to people thinking about, because one of the things you did was go out on your own, start your own firm. What advice would you give to people that are considering doing something like that, starting their own firm, starting their own company, whatever it may be, kind of taking that plunge?
I would tell them to do it. There's nothing like being your own boss. And so you can do it the way you want to do it. You can set it up the way you want to set it up. Be prepared. It's not going to be easy in the beginning. You're going to have a negative cash flow for a while. But if you do it right, if you do it honest, and that's the key, if you do things the right way and don't compromise, eventually you're going to be a success. The people that fail are the ones that compromise in their principles when they're doing this. And that's not something we ever did or do.
All right, we're going to do a couple rapid fire questions. So just you can answer them quickly and short, and just okay. Kind of we'll get to the point to see the answers. When you win a case, how do you celebrate?
When I win a case, I usually go home and I decompress, because frankly, the adrenaline is going so high when I'm trying a case and my mind is concentrating on it so much. After the win, it's kind of like a deep breath. You've got to decompress. So I go home, I have a nice meal, I relax, I think about nothing else, about work, just being home with my wife, having a good dinner, watching TV and relaxing.
What's your favorite hobby?
Golf. I'm a terrible golfer, but boy, do I love golf.
What are some bucket list items that you have done in the past and checked off your bucket list?
Well, playing golf at Pinehurst, St. Andrews, at all those famous courses, that's one bucket list. Going to Russia and going to Red Square, I did that a couple years ago. We went on a cruise that covered the whole Baltic. That's another one of the bucket lists that I always wanted to do. Cruising the Mediterranean, did that.
What's something that's on your bucket list that you haven't done yet?
Something I haven't done and I may never do, unfortunately I've accepted it, is play golf at Augusta.
Yeah, that would be embarrassing.
Not embarrassing, I'm just getting on.
How would your colleagues describe you?
I've heard when they knew I wasn't listening, but I think that I am a tough litigator, that I am hard, a hard person in the courtroom. Outside the courtroom, not so much, but when you finally get to the point where you're in trial and it's a real adversarial situation, I am hard.
Okay, what is the most meaningful award or accolade you've received?
The most meaningful would probably be the Jack Edmonds Award from the Inns of Court in Tampa that I received. That is an award for professionalism as well as for competence in trial.
What is your favorite type of case?
My favorite, it would be a criminal case. It would be a complex case that isn't just a one-day trial. I like the long trials.
That's what I was going to ask. Well, so do you have anything more specific? White collar, financial fraud, drugs, like what? Any type of case you like more than the other?
I really like financial fraud because I like getting into the minutiae of the documents.
What's the longest trial you've ever had?
I think that would probably be about 6 months.
It's insane.
I had one year where I was literally before Judge Kovacevich for 10 months. I had two trials, two really long trials. So in that year, she saw me for 10 months.
And that's federal?
Federal, right? Yes.
Okay. Was that as a prosecutor or a defense attorney?
Defense attorney. Yeah, state trials, I had one for 7 days, and everybody was amazed because it's like the longest trial they've ever seen. I mean, state trials don't
last. Yeah, 6 months is pretty unusual, you'd say that,
right? Oh, yeah, even for federal trials.
All right, what general career advice would you give to younger lawyers?
I would tell them to gain experience and to look at the older lawyers. Don't just come out of law school thinking that you're the cat's meow, you're the hottest thing that ever walked on the earth. Understand that you need to learn, that you need to learn from the older lawyers, and always, always be honest and ethical, no matter what the temptation is to compromise.
Is there anything that you would do different over your career or in the firm's history? If you could go back and change one thing, what would it be?
Well, now that I look back on it, and it has a lot to do with you, I think that if I would have done personal injury more
earlier in
the career, that would be more sustainable than criminal defense. That I think that you, personal injury, you build on it. Criminal defense, you really hope you never see the client again. You hope they don't get arrested again.
Well, personal injury, you hope you never see him again either.
But in personal injury, you build up a clientele in personal injury. There are referral sources, that kind of thing. Criminal defendants, that usually they're a one and done.
Yeah. All right, so how much longer do you think you're going to practice?
As long as I am physically and mentally able, I'll continue to practice. I can tell that I still am because when I try cases, I can still try the case, and I still know every piece of paper and every document in that case.
And as you look back on kind of the firm's 40-year history and all the things that we've done, what are some reflections and thoughts that you have about the firm?
I am really proud that the firm still maintains a good reputation for integrity. I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud that few people can really complain about the way they've been treated in the firm, and we treat people really well in this firm, and the staff is taught to treat people well, everybody. We have some of my criminal clients are charged with some pretty not so nice things, but I've taught my staff, I don't care what they're charged with, they're still human beings, and they still need to be treated with respect.
And same with the personal injury, and I think that is a good kind of summation of the firm. So hopefully you guys learned something about our firm, about our founding member. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them in the post, and we'll be back with you next time.
You have been listening to The Lawyer You Know with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos Sartis & Tragos in Clearwater discuss common legal questions, providing some insights into the legal process, and cover current events as they relate to the legal field. Listen each Tuesday for The Lawyer You Know with Peter Tragos, or download The Lawyer You Know wherever you hear your podcasts.